welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tomos Lewis, for this, our first television review of the year. In today's programme, we'll be looking ahead to see what the streaming services are up to in 2017, and we'll discuss the final season of Lena Dunham's series, Girls. And before the end of the show, we'll pay our own tribute to the late actresses Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds via the HBO documentary Bright Lights. Well, joining me to discuss all of that and more too, I hope, is Monocle's authority on the small screen, the arts and entertainment writer for the UK's Telegraph newspaper, Alice Vincent. Alice, a very warm welcome back to
Hello.
The programme.
Happy
Thank
New
you.
Year
to Happy
you too.
Happy
New Year. Yeah.
Hope you had a lovely break.
It was lovely enough, yeah.
Well, plenty in 2016 to talk about from the small screen. 2017 and the streaming services particularly. What's exciting you about the 12 months to come?
We've got so many giants of the big screen coming down to the small screen over the next year. It's quite remarkable, really. You know, there's that familiar tussle between Amazon and Netflix. They're both really bringing out some heavyweights, but also really interesting things happening on Hulu, which is only available in some territories at the moment, mostly in America. But they've got some genuinely, like, the kind of shows that you're like, oh, how are we going to watch this in the UK? So, yeah, I mean, where do you want to start, really?
And, well, look, let's stay with Hulu then for a quick second. Obviously, you know, the HBOs of the world, Netflix, they have, you know, shaken up TV in ways that even a few years ago, I suppose, kind of, you know, many of us wouldn't really have predicted. Is Hulu kind of a bit late to the game, or is this kind of a welcome sort of player in this?
Yeah, so Hulu has been bubbling around for a while. It's certainly, you know, it preceded Amazon Prime. It was around, you know, pretty much the same time Netflix was, and it's never really taken off because their original content just hasn't been that good. But they're bringing out an adaptation of Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale, and that stars Elizabeth Moss, and it looks stunning. They've got a lot of sort of TV streaming familiar faces. Samira Wiley from Orange is the New Black on Netflix, for instance, is in it. That looks very, very good. And there's also a period costume drama with Bite, which is called Harlots, and that looks like it could be worth a watch too.
So this could be Hulu's year then, you think?
I hope so, yeah.
And let's go then to, say, Netflix. They've obviously had quite a good, well, the Golden Globes recently obviously heaped praise on The Crown. You know, what can we look forward to from Netflix this year?
So Netflix is, you know, it's bringing back a lot of the old favourites. Obviously, one of the huge triumphs 2016 was Stranger Things, and that came out of nowhere, and now everyone's gagging for the second season.
Including me, frankly.
Right, I mean, we just want to know what happened to Barb, don't we?
Absolutely.
But also with new material, Emma Stone, who's obviously being showered with awards as well at the moment, and Jonah Hill, they appear in this weird offbeat comedy, which is based on a Norwegian dark comedy called Maniac. Now, that's directed by Kari Fukunaga, who fans of The True Detective will recognise that name. He directed it all with cinematic prowess. And then also, intriguingly, we're going to see the first German-produced Netflix original called Dark, which is interesting.
And Dark is, you know, part of a broader picture for Netflix, isn't it? Obviously, going back to The Crown, kind of which is British made, this kind of move into making Netflix a global player and global television and television production is quite exciting, isn't it? For sectors all around the world and, you know, sectors that have, you know, really sort of dominated their own markets. Yeah. But now sort of the doors are opening, thanks to Netflix, I suppose, to a broader audience.
Yeah, that is certainly one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is to say that, oh, is Netflix, you know, is it getting its fingers in too many pies? Is it going to monopolise things? What does it mean for those smaller territories and those production studios? I do genuinely think it's a good thing. Like, look at what The Crown has done. It's brought talent such as Claire Foy to the international mainstream. And it's going to be cool to see Netflix not just acquire international TV shows, but actually make them as well.
And let's look at Amazon briefly. Sure. They've got quite an exciting year ahead too. Mm. What sort of piqued your interest there?
So they've got Bryan Cranston. They've pinched Bryan Cranston, familiar face of Breaking Bad, which is obviously one of Netflix's early very big acquisitions. And he is executive producing and starring in something called Sneaky Pete. And we don't know very much about it. We just know that Bryan Cranston's in it and he's called Sneaky Pete. So I'm excited about that. And then my kind of potential indulgent trash for the year is coming from The Beginning of Everything, which is what has been dubbed a fictionalised biopic. I mean, you know, they're basically just making things up and pegging it to someone who existed, and that someone is Zelda Fitzgerald. So I'm imagining Christina Ricci in a kind of fake Gatsby, real life Gatsby, exciting things.
I mean, I'd be sort of tempted to say what's not to love, really. Yeah, but I suppose with a lot of those kind of TV shows, yeah. You know, never know, 50-50, frankly.
There's Embrace also the Flowers.
Yes, exactly. Nothing wrong with that either, frankly. Also quite an interesting adaptation of the lauded feminist novel I Love Dick is coming up, too.
Yes, I am so excited about this.
And
I think I've spoken about
cast,
it on this show
it?
Before. Yeah, it really is. So you've got the return of Kevin Bacon and also new stars as well. The main character is played by a very well-loved actress from Transparent, which Amazon has done so well with. So, should be good.
And just briefly, before we end the roundup of the streaming services in 2017, what do you think it'll mean for, you know, more traditional sort of television formats? Have they sort of managed to sort of meet the streaming services head on, kind of with the sort of changing of the game, if you like? We'll talk about some specific TV shows that are out now and are coming up. But what's your sense of how they've responded and how what else is coming up, say, in these more traditional sort of arenas of television in the year to come?
I mean, the thing is, as has been proven in the last couple of years, it just makes terrestrial TV think, oh, we've got to up our game a bit. I don't think it's a bad thing. It's quite impossible to tell because the streaming services never release their ratings. So for all we know, we could be chatting endlessly about Handmaid's Tale, but there might only be 500,000 people watching it.
Well, let's move on then to one of the most sort of talked about defining possibly TV shows of the past sort of 10 years, I guess, is it? The final season of Girls is airing very soon. Writer Lena Dunham, of course, made her a household name, bit of a cultural icon, I suppose, in her own right. We'll talk about that in a minute, but let's just hear a little taster of the series, the final series that will be airing very soon.
I'm mentally ill. I'm overweight. I isolate people.
Why can't someone just tell me exactly what to do in a way that makes it seem like it's my idea?
I try to reach for
all those ladies out there who like have jobs and purses and nice personalities. Those are not my friends.
Why are you guys mad at me about Adam? Grow up!
For you to say grow up, huh? I am a grown-up.
Do you promise that we'll always be friends?
You think I'm gonna stop being your friend now after putting up with all this bullshit?
A little snapshot there of season 6, the final season of Girls. Before we get into that, give us a quick roundup of, you know, what this season is rounding off, if you like. It's been a pretty remarkable journey, I suppose, both in terms of, you know, television, Lena Dunham herself, but also, I suppose, the millions of people who've tuned into it over the past few years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is with Girls is that it's gone through one of those kind of, you know, cycles of fame that any really successful show goes through. It goes from being a cult hit to a phenomenon to everyone wanting a bit of it to citing it as the voice of a generation to the eventual kind of knocking of, oh, it's not as good anymore. But I think I am genuinely kind of quite, I've got quite a lot of the feels about this final series, actually. I think that symbolically it represents a lot of really good things that have happened to TV over the past 5 years. And I think that from a plot point of view, we've grown up, well, I'm basically the same age as Lena Dunham. We've grown up with these girls. We've grown up with these characters. We want to see what's happened to them and whether they successfully make it into adulthood.
And that story that has been told, say, over the past 5 years, how has that story evolved in terms of the people who are watching it? Like you said, it sort of became a bit of a voice of a generation for a certain sort of slice of the audience who is watching it and tuning in. Has it sort of caught up with sort of reality? Has it echoed it, or has it sort of been following along? Is it still in touch with whatever it chimed with when it debuted, do you think?
I think so. I mean, there was the opening episode of season 5, so that was last year's season, was a wedding, and they'd managed to capture every kind of perfect Pinteresty point of any kind of late 20-something wedding in the Western world you could possibly imagine. It was just perfect. That's part of the reason why Girls has resonated and it's become such a millennial success, is because it knows its subject matter so well. But I also think from a kind of a televisual point of view, it's bred so much, it's created so much. You know, people will always... it's kind of become a bit of an albatross around the neck for emerging stars that people will say, oh, she's the new Lena Dunham. You know, Phoebe Waller-Bridge's Fleabag, Issa Rae's Insecure. There have been so many other young women on TV that we just didn't have 6 years ago.
And what has it done for those, you know, young female TV stars now then? Has it opened a, you know, you said it's been a, become a bit of a millstone for some possibly, but has it kind of given a platform that just didn't really exist before? Has it kind of created a box that kind of other sort of, you know, the next Lena Dunham, say, kind of have to sort of, you know, lock themselves into slightly?
Yeah, and there's a way that obviously she created a mould which people are probably now trying to break, and so they should. But also, there wasn't, part of the reason why girls were so revolutionary is because normal, boring, maybe, yeah, slightly privileged white women in their 20s just hadn't, women in their 20s hadn't been represented on television before, independent of men. And now, you know, because of the success of Girls, executives and producers and people who control what we watch have said, actually, okay, there's room, we can do this.
Well, that was season 6 of Girls, airs on the 12th of February on HBO. Now, at the end of last year, we lost two beloved actresses, mother and daughter Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher. Their sometimes fraught relationship is well documented, and it is the focus of a new documentary, the release of which has been brought forward to this week. Bright Lights premiered last year at the Cannes Film Festival, but made its debut to the general public on HBO a few nights ago. Directed by Fisher Stevens and Alexis Bloom, it follows Debbie and Carrie in their neighbouring Hollywood homes. Alice, what sort of light does this documentary shed on their relationship?
This is such an intimate documentary. I mean, it's one that obviously the release has been brought forward and it's tinged massively with emotion and poignancy in light of such horrible, shocking events over the last couple of weeks. I think even if that hadn't happened, there is so much love for both of these women in the world. And I described this documentary to a colleague earlier. I was like, it's like watching The Osbournes, you know, that MTV reality TV show which went inside the lives of Sharon and Ozzy Osbourne's life. I mean, you're in this kind of bonkers palatial Beverly Hills home, or a complex rather, and Debbie Reynolds has her house in it. And Carrie Fisher has her house in it. As Carrie Fisher said, they're separated by a large hill. And these women, their relationship is more than mother-daughter. It's more than sisterly. It's more than best friends. I've never seen anything quite like it. It is utterly charming and at times very difficult to watch. But it's the way that it's been captioned is simply extraordinary.
Well, let's hear a quick clip. This is Bright Lights.
That's it. That's all.
Okay, look.
Turn around this way because your rear end is to the camera.
I'm my mom's best friend.
I share everything with my daughter.
That's right.
Especially the check.
Far more than I ever would want to. I know what my mother feels and wants.
Now just do what your mother says. It makes life easier.
As if.
That was a small taste of Bright Lights there. You called it extraordinary, Alice. In the light of the equally extraordinary deaths within a day of each other of Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher, does it change the way we see this? Was HBO right to sort of bring this forward, do you think?
They were absolutely right. I mean, cynics will sit there and say, oh, well, they'll get far higher ratings now. And yeah, they probably will. But I also think that it explains an awful lot about their relationship. I mean, I'm no scientist, I'm no medic, but you watch this and you can understand why one felt she couldn't live without the other. They were just incredibly close, but also it's a really brilliant explanation of the sheer kind of insanity of their lives and what these women have had to put up with. I mean, brief recap, Eddie Fisher, incredibly famous pop star, marries Debbie Reynolds. They were childhood sweethearts, America's sweethearts. They have two small children. Meanwhile, he dumps Debbie Reynolds, runs off with her best friend, Elizabeth Taylor. I mean, it's the scandal you just can't even make up. And throughout it all, Debbie Reynolds was a woman of steel. It was, and you know, it's just wonderful to see such a tender light shone on women who are older as well. So rarely we see women accurately presented beyond the age of about 45 on telly. And here we've got one in her 60s and another one in her 80s. Just incredible.
And Debbie Reynolds was pretty frank and open about the sort of heartbreak she'd been through during her life and in the later years of her life too. That kind of steeliness that you describe, does that come out in this documentary, if it is this kind of, you know, tender portrait of mother and daughter?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. So the whole thing is sort of based around the fact that Debbie Reynolds, who can kind of barely walk unaided, is determined to do these huge shows in Las Vegas, which cause Carrie a huge amount of stress. She's obviously very concerned about her mother. She gets up on stage and you see, like, you can see how that kind of Star is Born thing, you know, there's a woman just performing brilliantly, cracking jokes, wearing this insane beaded dress. It's a portrait of them as people who have had careers in the spotlight as well, as just being people.
And Carrie Fisher, you know, in the weeks after her death, so many stories came out sort of outlining kind of what a character she was, basically. And of course, you know, fairly recent sort of US TV interviews where she totally broke the pattern, really, of what a sort of morning news show interview goes like, to the great sort of affection of the people who are watching. You know, is that kind of brought out as well in this documentary?
I mean, she sort of, she kind of carries it as a narrative voice in a way, because Debbie Reynolds doesn't speak massively to camera. I'm such a Carrie Fisher fan that I feel I need to extricate myself from it a little bit. It's very tender in how it shows both her kind of her struggles with mental illness, which Carrie's never really been shy about, but also in the joys that she's found in life as well, and her struggles. And yeah, I think if anything, it's a spotlight away from the Carrie cracking a joke on a morning TV show, and actually a more, you know, a closer look at what is actually a very fragile and important woman. You know, it's a really interesting way for us to see our stars like this.
And just finally, the relationship and the tension within that relationship particularly, again, was fairly well documented throughout their lives and their later lives, which famously was brought back, and this closeness again, which was very well publicised. Do we get any sense of that tension? Is this idea of reconciliation, you know, the defining kind of message, I guess, from this documentary, would you say?
It's funny, you know, it's not really brought up particularly. We hear a lot about their relationship with Eddie Fisher, who obviously they had a lot of ups and downs with. But no, there's just an overwhelming sense of love. And it's truly lovely to see. And I think it's an excellent documentary.
Well, if you missed Bright Lights, then it's currently streaming on HBO Now and HBO Go. And that brings us to the end of today's edition of the Monocle Arts Review. Thank you, as ever, to my guest, Alice Vincent. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tomos Lewis. This programme was produced by Holly Fisher. Do join us at the same time tomorrow when Kathy Rensenbrink will be in the studio to talk books. But for now, from me, Tomos Lewis, it's goodbye and thank you for listening.